Blog Talk Radio.
You're alive. And I'm, oh, that's right, it doesn't do that. We, you know, how long we've been doing this, and I'm still waiting for Blog Talk Radio to, you know, say, hey, your show is live. 68 degrees here in the Zephyr Hills, Wesley Chapel area, Tampa area. It's in the 60s. We have a cold front coming through. Break out the jackets. It's going to be in the 60s tonight, or 50s.
Brr.
58, 50 something. I forgot what it was.
Brr.
Yeah. Ooh. Christmas here.
It is. It's our Christmas.
Yeah, during the day they're at the beach, and at night we're shivering in 60-degree weather.
Hot chocolate and our Snuggies.
Actually, I don't have hot chocolate tonight. I have one of my favorites, the Plantation Spice. Excuse me just a second.
Oh, fantastic. I have an Ohio Gewürztraminer.
Yes, from
tonight. Yeah.
From Ohio.
From Ohio, yeah. I picked it up a couple years ago when we were up there. And very nice Gewürz, as a matter of fact, from Friedman.
From where?
Farland Winery.
Wow.
We visited them in Cincinnati. But the wine is from the Isle St. George, which is in the little island in Lake Erie.
Oh, wow.
And that's where the vineyard is. Very, very pleasant. Very pleasant Gewürztraminer, good Gewürz. And then because we're covering Austria and Switzerland tonight,
yes.
I figure a Gewürz would be a nice apropos wine for this area. People, they come in tonight?
They are, I don't know, let me do the intro. We'll be back in a minute and 30 seconds. I'm sure they'll be at the end of the intro because they are every week. And
okay.
It's very dark outside, but we have the floodlights going on in the front yard, the backyard where we're broadcasting from. It's a great evening, and we'll be right back. It's all about wine. It is now 7:01 p.m. here in Florida, and we'll be back. We are live on December the 3rd. It's in 30 Winery right after this.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A weekly call-in talk show presented each Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Featuring Ron with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. We encourage listeners to call and participate during this hour-long broadcast. Dial 646-727-3235. 646-727-3235 anytime during the show.
Yep.
Winery location, contact information, and upcoming events are presented at the end of the show. Sit back, relax, and join us with a glass of world-class wine made right here in Florida. And now, vineyardist, tasting expert, cellar master, and winemaker with Florida Estates Winery.
Yeah.
Here's Ron.
There he is.
That's people. Thank you.
There's only two spices.
They have to keep moving. It's so cold. They got to keep moving.
I do see some with gloves and the caps on, covering their ears, because it is 68 degrees. That was quick. It just kind of cut out. It's it is very chilly outside. 68 degrees right now in Zephyr Hills. So
the whole Bay Area is just, you know, we're a little chilly here.
I was just going to bring this up though. If you're in this area and it is 68 degrees, you may want to cover your plants. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Thank you. That's a good point.
We have tonight we're discussing Austria and Switzerland, two of my favorite countries, although I've only been to one. And
have you been? Which one?
Switzerland. Actually, I was in the Alps back in. I'll just say the 70s. So, did some skiing up there.
Did you? Wow, fantastic.
Yeah, and we want to talk about some upcoming events at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes. That is at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. It is a big birthday bash celebration, a big birthday there on December the 12th. They will, wow, I didn't even put the applause sign up. That's pretty good. It is a big birthday celebration and wine fest that is Saturday, December the 12th p.m. at Florida Estates Winery. Cake, door prizes, and of course the wine fest, and a lot of other great entertainment and everything that you can look for in at the winery. It's just fantastic, and hopefully our weather's going to hold up for the remainder of the month, and it's going to be great. And hopefully it won't be as chilly as tonight. We don't know. But
I don't know.
That's going to do it as far as December goes, right? Because your next event is on January 23rd, which is the wine class.
Well, actually, we're having a festival on the 9th.
Oh, okay.
Then the class is the 23rd. We will be having a festival on the 9th in January. But you're right. That is the only one we're having in December.
Yeah, after the 12th, it's pretty much until January.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Anything else you wanted to add about Winefest or anything coming up? Or
Not right now. We'll
do that later.
We'll cover it at the end here.
Okay.
I don't think Austrian and Switzerland is going to take us a whole hour, so we'll have some.
Okay.
We'll have some time.
All right. Very good. Okay, we'll get you started here. It's about 53 minutes left in the program. Give us a call, 646-727-3235, or chat with us. We're on 1000mics.com. You'll see us on the main page there. Just click on it, and you'll eventually get to the page there where the player is, and there's a comment field. You can open up the comment box, type in your comment as a guest, and we'll see it here, and I'll put you on. So. The text, or we'll just tell Ron, hey, we have a comment, and that kind of thing. So let's go ahead and get with it. Ron, welcome back. It's we had some time.
We had broken last week, Germany.
Yeah, and we're ready to start with another country over there in Europe. This is great.
Yep. Yeah, going to Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Fun. Austria, you don't think too much of Austria for wine, but it's amazing how much Austria really is involved with wine and how much of a history Austria has in wine. For a long time, they pretty well forgot see too much of an export out of Austria of different wines. The most popular countries that they do ship to are Germany and the United States. And a lot of the characteristics of the Austrian wines are comparable to German wines, to a point. I'll get into that a little bit more in a moment here. The Austrian wine country is four medium-sized, moderate-sized growing regions or growing areas. And within those, they have 19 wine-growing areas. When I say growing areas, say it's like California, then 19 within California or New York, you know, something like that. So because it's such a small country, we do have not a whole lot of areas and a whole lot of land that we can talk about, you know, how big it is or anything else. And I'm delaying for a minute here because I'm looking up my little map on Austria. Austria, if you're not familiar with where it is located, it is in Europe. It is bordered on the far west by Switzerland, on the northwest by Germany, on the direct north by the Czech Republic, northeast by Slovakia, which used to be the whole country of Czechoslovakia, divided in half now. To the due east is Hungary, and Hungary does put out some pretty nice wines, by the way. To the south of that is Slovenia.
Slovenia?
No, not Slovenia. Let me see. To the south of that. It is Slovenia, I'm sorry.
Slovenia.
Yeah, Slovakia, Slovenia. To the south of Austria, Austria is Slovenia, and to the southwest is Italy. So they have influence from all sorts of areas there, all sorts of different areas that border their country. Viticulture dates back, solidly dates back, not thinking or anything, far back to 700 B.C., the Celts or Celts, however you would like to pronounce it, used wine for rituals and a lot of daily consumption within the area of Austria. And the tradition was carried on by the Romans as they conquered north there, again, just bordering on Italy and the Roman Empire. Romans carried a lot of grapevines and wines into Austria. After the end of the Roman Empire and the Dark Ages, Charlemagne had a great influence on the Austrian wine growing and wine making, or grape growing and wine making in that part of the world. And also the monks from the Burgundy region of France came over. and started to do a lot of winemaking and passing on their knowledge during the late. So it's a lot of old history, a lot of old area because of their place and their where they are located in the world. It's a lot of influence from all around them. Today, the Austrian viticulture is has a marked by a lot of legislative initiatives to promote the quality and to promote the types of grapes grown and the how it's made. As we have talked before about France and Germany and Italy, all these countries have their government designations and their government controls of how much they can grow and what they can grow and all that other stuff. Austria doesn't have that, but they are getting more and more so all the time. More and more laws are being passed. More and more rules are being imposed upon how it can be made and what can be made and all. And because of that, it is starting to resemble a little bit more of what you're going to find in countries that surround it, hence Germany, Italy, France. Winemaking there is really starting to pick up. It's a tremendous amount of influence from around the world going into the Austrian region there. I don't know why. I want to say because of the fact that back in 1992, I believe it was, when Austria joined the European Union. And when they did join the European Union, it sparked a lot of interest within the country itself, which improved a lot of the vineyard qualities and a lot of the vineyard techniques that they started to that they've been using over the years. There are the quality is really becoming recognized worldwide in the last 20, 30 years. There are over 100 acres planted under vines in Austria, and with approximately 3,200 wine producers and about 6,500 of them bottling their own wines. So a lot of people then. And when we talk about the Austria wines, we're not talking enormous vineyards. We're not talking places like we spoke about in France or in Germany where the vineyards are so large. We're talking about very small vineyards, condensed vineyards with maybe 2 or 3 acres on some small ones. And when I say 2 or 3 acres, that's not all under vine. That includes the house, the fermentation and processing barn, everything else, on up to 15, 20 acres. And then they do have some larger ones, but a lot of them are rather small producers. Most of the wine growing in Austria is concentrated on the eastern regions. And I, as always, my pronunciation of these names, these are German-influenced names with a lot of Austrian influence in it, and I will probably slaughter them, but I apologize for any Austrians out there or anyone who does know how to pronounce these names properly, because I am not one who does. The western or the eastern Austrian wine area, the Vineland, Weinland, Vineland, Austria. It's a the furthest eastern area. Within that is the Vienna area. Also, just south of that area and to the west is Styria-land, or Styria, S-T-Y-R-I-A, or S-T-E-I-R-E-R, land, Styria-land. Also, all the way west, and which covers over half the country, is Burgenland, E-R-G-L-A-N-D, Burgenland, Austria. These are the three main regions of Austria, and they are most of the regions and most of the areas are the ones that produce the produce white wines, like Germany, best known for the white wines, although there is a little bit of red made, but most of it is white wines. the climate of Austria and the growing regions, like I say, most of the growing regions is to the eastern part of the country. The climate in growing regions is comparable to that of the Burgundy regions of France. Warm, sunny summers and a long autumn season with cool nights and warm days. Just perfect conditions for grapes. The Austrian wine regions are influenced a lot by the Atlantic air streams from the west that come over, coming through France and influence the Austrian growing region. The far, far western edge of Austria is the Alps. And so you also have that blocks a lot of the winds and stuff. And so there, because of the Alps being in the west, this is why we have most of our wine growing regions in the east. I would say all of the wine growing regions actually are in the east, with a speckled area here and there that runs a little bit further west. The Mediterranean has some influence on Austria also, coming up from the south, the climate and soils from the Mediterranean Sea. And then the combinations of the influences of the Atlantic and the winds and the Alps blocking some of the weather, and then the Mediterranean, makes for a very long growing season that is typically just about the right amount of rain and the soil being good and all that, makes for some great grapes. The late harvest late harvesting Riesling grape. Riesling usually is a little bit longer growing season, grows extremely well in Austria because of the fact that the harvest can last into late October, early November there because of the influence of the weather and the climate's going around. So and also because of the long growing season, it makes for much richer grapes and a little bit higher sugar, which makes for some very nice sweet grapes, although they don't always produce their grapes in a sweet style. We have to remember that about Austria. The most popular white varietal wine that, before I get into that, I want to talk a little bit more about the landscape and the climate of Austria. Some areas there, because of the climate, because of the influence, could be picking up late as the end of November, which is absolutely unheard of in most places in the world. But with the lower Austrian wine growing region, which is close to the Danube River, creates a mini climate, a microclimate that makes for a longer growing season, makes for much stronger, unique grapes, and actually something rather unique coming out of that area. The Burgenland and Burgenland black grapes, such as Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Syrah, Nebbiolo, have little problem growing. We were talking about these grapes in other countries and how that they need to have their longer growing season to produce well and to survive. And grapes grow very well here because it does produce a longer growing season. The hills to the north and west are chalky soil, and both of them tend to be very good for Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, which has been very successful in those regions. And central and southern Burgenland are predominantly red wine growing regions, although the white grape is the central grape of most Austrian vineyards. The red grape is starting to pick up in the central and southern Burgenland regions. The chief grape grown in this area is called the Blaufränkisch. That's spelled Blaufränkisch, Blaufränkisch. It is a red grape. And let me look here. I think it is also the known as the barrel frying peaches, I think, is a Pinot Noir grape, but I don't know, so I'm not going to say. Probably the most popular white varietal in Austria is the Grüner Veltliner, also grown in Germany. The Grüner Veltliner is a fresh, crisp, a lot of concentrated and intense flavors, shows nuances of grapefruit and citrus with some spiciness, peppery, cracked peppery type undertones, and just a very refreshing with little bite type of wine. I mentioned earlier I'm having Gewürztraminer. The Grüner Veltliner is it reminds me a lot. I've had a couple of the Grüner Veltliner, and it does remind me a lot of a Gewürz. The Gewürz being a little bit sweeter, I think, than the Grüner Veltliner. The red varietal, besides what I've just mentioned, the Blauer Zweigelt, 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 is a light grape, usually characteristics of cherry tones, not much tannins, soft subdued tannins, a lot of fruitiness into it. Similarities to Beaujolais, not a Beaujolais Nouveau so much as just a Beaujolais with a little bit more depth than the Beaujolais Nouveau, which we're still familiar with. The the wines in Austria are rather diversified and because of the influence from all the areas around them. Australian varietals, the ones that grow mainly in Austria, are usually produce a refreshing, distinct, I keep coming back to pepper, and that's probably the best description I can think of for the Austrian wines, is a peppery tone to most everyone. A lot like the Beaujolais, the white wines take on some a lot of characteristics of some of the white Burgundies out of France. Riesling being probably the premier grape growing there, again, influences from Germany because of it. Chardonnay is also grown there. There it's known not as a Chardonnay grape, but as a Morellon, M-O-R-I-L-L-O-N, Morellon. And it's been grown there for many, many years. There's also the Weissburgunder and the Grauburgunder, which is the Pinot Blanc and the Pinot Gris, respectively. These are also grown in that area throughout Austria. And I say throughout in the wine growing regions, which again, we refer back to the eastern part of the country. Like I just mentioned, probably the most Svelte, it is a cross of the St. Laurent and the Brau Frankisch. And so it is produces a lighter style, usually put in oak, and with oak, a little bit more of the characteristics of the grape. Usually the grape is quite acidic. By putting it in oak, this lowers the impact of the acid, helps balance it a little bit with the other fruits and things. Oak does tend to help smooth out a wine, and they do put it a lot through a lot of the wines through a malolactic fermentation, which gives it a buttery softness to it, which covers the acid also. The Austrians make a lot of their wines with some acidity. They tend to enjoy that acid coming out in the wines. Oak is common now, and actually oak became common in the late 80s in Austrian wines. and it's used really quite often now. Again, acid has been something that's always been very prevalent in the Austrian wines, and the oak helps cover that up a little bit. And so more and more are using the oak, but the traditionalists, you will find many vintners that will not oak it simply because of acid coming out. But a lot of people do like the acid. A good balance between acid and sweetness is something that's what makes a wine just really jump out at you. Too much acid, and the wine just seems very sharp. Not enough acid, and it tends to be very flat. And so some winemakers like to bring up the acid. I personally don't like a strong acidic wine. If it does complement the wine, great, wonderful, I'm all for it. But so often winemakers use acid to give a little bit more character to it, and I don't see where people would enjoy that. I get too many comments at the winery about people not caring for the bite, the burn, the sting that acid gives. So I tend to stay away from it a little bit myself. But again, back to Austria, a lot of the wines are very acidic because of the soils and the Rieslings and the Grüner Veltliner are generally thought not to need the oak. It's usually made without the oak style. The Sauvignon Blanc and the Morellon, again, that's the Chardonnay, are used in oak almost exclusively now, and most red wines are being oak aged in Austria. The average size of the vineyard and the house, the land that's owned by winemakers in Australia is usually a little less than 5 acres. I was mentioning this earlier. It's usually a little bit less than 5 acres. And some of the highly rated wines are on these small plots. And there are some growers who have, say, up to 15 acres who plant a variety of, 10, 12, 14 different wine and make the wine out of each one. 15 acres is a rather small area to incorporate all this stuff, but it's the concentration of the grapes and everything, and trying to keep them within their areas and do that, they've been able to produce a lot of really top quality wines. We don't see a lot of those here. Most of them are drank within the countries over there in Germany and the surrounding countries. Austrian has graded levels of sugar. They label their wines in the content of sugar that is found in the wines. This is a lot like the French system, a lot like the German system, actually more so on the German system than you will find on the French system, simply because the German wines are made a lot like the Australian ones. The varietals, though, between the German and the Austrian are different. There's not the same rules. If you find an Austrian wine that is labeled a certain way, that is not corresponding to the same way as the Germans are, which can be very confusing, obviously. There are varietal is actually labeled on most of the Austrian wine labels as opposed to just the areas and the regions and stuff. They actually put the varietals on there, which makes it a little bit easier to identify styles. Ausbruch, A-U-S-B-R-U-C-H, Ausbruch, dessert wines, very rich wines. They must be at least a Baron Auschlese level in sweetness. Now, as a quick review here, we talked about the levels of sweetness in Germany. Spätlese, Auschlese, Baron Auschlese, Trockenbaron Auschlese, and Eiswein. These are levels of sweetness. In Austrian wine labels, these also are levels of sweetness, but they have different rules and different standards that they go by. The the Ausbruch wine is traditionally a little bit less sweet than the standard Baron Ausleys, but more alcoholic, giving them sort of a Sauternes style of taste, as opposed to Sauternes. To me, seem to be a little bit heavier, a little bit thicker, a little bit sweeter. Very clean as far as the taste goes, but gives you a little bit heavier feel in the mouth. And when I say heavier, I mean feel in the mouth. As you know, I'm sure if you're listening to this program, it's because you drink wine, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what I mean, then what it's light fill in the mouth is something that just very soft and like water, heavier, like juice, apple juice or something, to give you an idea. The Ausbruch wines are lower sweetness, a little bit more alcohol, but again, like Sauternes, but there's no standard, there's no laws that state that they have to be any certain way. It just basically gives your one, you know, a very general way that they need to be made, and because of that, they can bounce around a lot. And as in German wines, again, the Austrian wines are classified in the sweetness lowest category. In the dessert wines of Austria is the Ausleser. This is the category sweetness in the grape. You can see an Austrian wine labeled Ausleser Trocken, T-R-O-C-K-E-N, Ausleser Trocken. This actually means that it is a very high alcohol dry wine. Can be confusing. You see Ausleser on there, you think sweet, but if it's from Austria, Austria Trocken, dry, a higher alcohol dry wine. Baron Ausleser is the next step up. It's usually a sweet wine, raisiny, honey flavor. It is effective with botrytis, and I've explained this in previous programs. Botrytis is a mold that gets on the grapes. And the highest level of sweetness that you're going to find in Austrian wines is the Trockenbaren Ausleser. And these are botrytis grapes that have basically shriveled up, look like raisins. And the, as in Germany, the Eiswein, E-I-S-W-E-I-N, is a dessert wine made from naturally frozen grapes. And these must be at least a Baron Ausleser richness. So you can make a Baron Ausleser Eiswein. And a lot of times you will see that on the label if it is a Baron Ausleser ice wine, fucking Baron Ausleser, they easy label that. Cabernet. I mentioned in Germany the Cabernet. The German Cabernet is usually a little bit sweeter, whereas the Austrian Cabernet is really dry. The range of alcohol has to be a minimum of 11% with a maximum of 12.7%. And so it tends to be a little bit drier Cabernet than you will find in most of your German wines. Qualitätswein, Qualitätswein, Qualitätswein. This is everyday drinking wines. These are, a lot of wines are made over there with this and used within this region. They also, you will, not only will see Qualitätswein labeled on a lot of the wines, you also see names like Smirk, and Federspiel. These are private classifications that vintners in certain areas will use. No legal connotation, no legal meaning, but you'll see this pop up on everyone. You see a Spätlese coming out of Germany, and it usually low alcohol and a little bit sweeter. Austrian Spätlese's are not. Austrian Spätlese's tend to be higher alcohol and usually are very dry. Again, confusing, I know. So if you are looking for a German wine, a Spätlese with some sweetness in it, be sure it is a German wine and not an Austrian wine, because you're going to get yourself almost the opposite of what you expect that it's going to be. Wow. And in 1995, I was trying to think here, I just ran across it. January 1st, 1995, Austria joined the European Union. since they joined the European Union, it does set standards on their wines. So in Austria, when they join the European Union, has to have less than 0.9% residual sugar, which is really pretty much nothing. You have red wines that can run up to 9%. You never oak age and all that stuff. So if you see a Trocken out of Austria, again, unlike German wines, where you might see a Trocken, this is effectively a dry wine. It's always going to be dry. It's going to have enough acidity to cover up any sweetness that might be in it, and so you need to be aware of that. So Australian wines, very good. Always remember you're going to probably pick up some acid in it that you wouldn't in German wines of the same names and the same styles and stuff. But again, very pleasant and very nice wines coming to Austria. Something a little bit different than what we're used to. Switzerland. Switzerland is right next to Austria. It is, and Mike's been there, which is exciting.
Well, part of it. Very small part of it.
Yeah, well, many years ago, but still, though, I've never been there. So, Switzerland is located north of Italy, east of France, south of Germany, and west of Austria. Switzerland noted probably more often than anything for its neutrality during wars, and because of the fact that Switzerland is virtually protected by mountains on all four sides, they have been able to stay out of any major conflicts that have happened throughout Europe and throughout the world over the centuries. But because they are surrounded on all different sides, they also have influence from all different wine-growing regions. The French, German, and Italian influence in Switzerland in wine growing is phenomenal. The Switzerland vineyards lie between 45 and 47 degrees north latitude, which is absolutely ideal for the world. I mentioned in earlier programs that there are two bands around the world where most all grapes grow. Switzerland falls right smack dab in the middle of the northern band on that, which is just a great temperature and climate for it. They get plenty of sunshine, just amount of rainfall, a good time of year. The winters are cold, but the summers are warm, and it creates some great microclimates and some great wine-growing regions. The most important, probably, influence is what they call the Föhn, F-O-H-N. The Föhn is the winds that blow down through the valleys from the alpine, warm alpine winds that blow through the valleys, which can influence the grapes tremendously in that in the country there. It brings in the warm weather, and it hurries up ripening and early cold, which they do quite often in Switzerland. It can be offset by the fact that the Föhn or the alpine winds are warming up and causing a faster developing of the grapes. The soil throughout Switzerland varies greatly. Volcanic shale, slate, dirt, get down to the rivers, you have river loam. It's hard to distinguish one type of soil throughout that country. Different regions have a variety of soils. Actually, Switzerland is divided into three main language regions. The French, German, and Italian. And then it breaks down further into combinations and Swiss language and stuff. French-speaking Switzerland accounts for about 77% of the total amount of people in France that speak in Switzerland that speak a language. About 77% speak French, and about 83% of Switzerland's wine is produced by French-speaking Switzerland or Swiss. So a big influence, a big French influence on the Switzerland wine growing and winemaking. There are Valais, V-A-L-A-I-S, has probably some of the prettiest wine growing regions in the world. From all the accounts I've read, it's just a gorgeous area there. And probably some of the highest vineyards in the world. They go up quite high into the mountains. It's in areas around a lot of the skiing areas. Some of the great skiing areas of Switzerland also have vineyards. Greatest density of the vineyards is in the south-facing slopes. These obviously that get most of the sun throughout the summer and even in the winter. The areas along the Rhone River, the beginning of the Rhone River, we talked about the Rhone River going through France. Well, it starts, the headwaters are in Switzerland, and it starts getting its share of wine-growing grapes from wine-growing regions there. Geneva is close to three of the main growing areas of the Lake Geneva and Geneva. They're smaller areas, but they put out some phenomenal wines. The lakes and rivers really help the climate, really help the grape-growing seasons there because of the warmth from the rivers and the lakes, and the warmth from the river and the lakes also influence it throughout the year, early spring and into the later fall region. So it gives an opportunity for the grapes to grow properly. German-speaking Switzerland has vineyards scattered throughout many different areas. 18 states, we call them. They call them cantons there. Through a lot of different areas there. Again, this is the influence from the northern part of Switzerland. The southern southwest part is influenced greatly by France, and that's where most of it's going, and Lake Geneva being over in the southwest part of France. But the northern part is a lot of influence from the German, grape-growing German culture. And then to the south, a tremendous influence from the Italian grape-growing region. And again, a lot of the Swiss grapes were brought to Switzerland by the Romans and brought up and planted. And these, a lot of these grapes have established, are still being cultivated in a lot of areas, and the ancestors of that. The Mediterranean does have some influence in some of the growing regions that are close to Italy, but it increases the sunshine, but it also increases the rainfall, which when you're growing grapes is not always a good thing. The grapes that are grown in Switzerland, I'll talk about the grape types. The Chasselas is grown probably the most planted grape in the French-speaking areas of Switzerland. The vine derives a lot of its taste and a lot of its characteristics from the soil, so it makes for some very acidic wines. So they almost all wines to a malolactic fermentation, which will lower the acid and create that softer, creamier mouthfeel that I was mentioning earlier in Austrian wines. The Chasselas grape is usually a very dry wine, not red wine dry, but a Chardonnay style dry. The vineyards going in that area, and as in most areas there, are usually planted on hills, a bit of hills because of Switzerland and the mountains throughout the country, that surround the country, a lot of hills, a lot of mountains. which make for a lot better drainage. The German-speaking areas, the Riesling Sylvaner grape, which is known as the Müller Thurgau grape, is a actually the first crossbreeding of grapes. The Sylvaner grape, or Müller Thurgau, is the first one ever crossbred. This produces a medium dry wine, best drank young, not one for aging, not one for keeping around. A little bit spicy, a little bit sweeter than a Sauvignon Blanc in that style. Sylvaner, also in the German-speaking area, is grown quite often. This is usually made into a dry grape, although it does make for a great late harvest, perfumey, sweet grape if left to get the botrytis on the lines and pick that late harvest. Chardonnay is grown around the Geneva, Lake Geneva area. These are usually oaked, but not well known, not for oak Chardonnays, but just something that's unique for that area, basically. Pinot Gris is grown in the area also in the warmer parts, again, in the Germanic Switzerland area, the German-speaking Switzerland area. The Marsan has tried for many years in the Upper Rhone Valley of Switzerland. This is usually wines that are labeled as Hermitage or Hermitage, highly alcoholic wines that are rather dry. Some of them are developed into sweetness, but usually you find a drier style. German-speaking areas, Germanic Switzerland also does a Pinot Noir grape, which probably about 70% of the plantings in the German area of Switzerland use a Pinot Noir grape. They use a unique, what they call a thermal vinification, where the grapes, before fermentation, before it starts going into fermentation after they've been picked, it gives the grapes more color. It pretty much eliminates any tannins and stuff. So because of it increases the color, but it takes away some of the characteristics, some of the flavor, some of the taste of the wines doing that. The red grapes are being grown in a lot of other areas, a variety of different red grapes in a lot of areas of Switzerland that are being experimented with. There's nothing, no major plantings or anything. The Gamay grape is really grown quite extensively in the French Switzerland area, again over by France. Gamay, if you remember, if you've listened to the French program, Gamay grape is used really quite often in France, and it has been now planted a lot in the in Switzerland from the influence. Excuse me. Also, there's in the French area, they're experimenting with and coming up with some great Merlot. They planted Merlot a number of years ago. It's coming out with some soft tannin, a little bit acidic, but a lot of fruitiness and a lot of flavors into it. A lighter Merlot, but with a lot of fruitiness, and some of them they're doing some oak aging on, which gives them a little bit more characteristic. The Gamarette or Gournoir are two red wines that have been crossed. One called a Reichensteiner. And red Gamay are also planted there. These have been crossed to give the Gamarette and Gournoir. And they are becoming more and more popular there. Light wines as far as taste, but producing some deep red colors and some black fruit. More and more oak aging is being used in them, which is creating a more depth to the wine. The crossed hybrid grapes, usually it takes some work and takes some years to get them, and they've been working with them and playing with them for years, and they're starting to come up with some very nice crossbred wines out of the grapes from this area. A lot of the wines are labeled with the canton or the state or the area that it's in. Some villages use a label and the grape variety. So if you get something from Switzerland, you will see a number of names on there. Look for the grape variety. And actually, that's very difficult, too, considering that, you know, a lot of these you probably won't recognize as a grape variety. You can say very easily that could be the town. Who knows? But it's... And I've mentioned this before also, but until these different countries start labeling their wines with more simplistic terms like this is from Geneva and this is a Sylvaner grape, then it's going to be difficult to get a big market here in this country because we in the United States, let's face it, are rather lazy when it comes to buying our wine. We don't want to do a whole lot of research, and we read the labels and say, oh, this sounds good, and we buy it. So if anyone from Switzerland or Germany or France or any of those are listening to me, simplify your labels and you'll probably sell more here in the States. So that's Switzerland, Austria and Switzerland. Nice wines from both of them. I've had an opportunity in the past to taste wines from both of those countries, and everyone I've ever had tend to be very good. Also tend to be a little bit of acidic wines, but you know, I'm not turned off by acidic wines. I love that little bite in a lot of them. So, but nice wines coming out of that part of the world.
Wow. Okay. That was kind of quick.
Yeah.
So that in Austria segment. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you cover. You know, I was going through the statistics earlier, and I was looking through how many shows on France we had. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, now we're covering two countries in one show. That's amazing. That how the difference is, how France is, you know, it can take, how many shows was it, like seven or eight or something? And
France is the wine growing country in the world.
Yeah.
Whereas you mentioned, you say, name a country that grows wine.
Yeah.
And France is usually one of the top three that people will mention.
Right.
You'll never mention Austria or Switzerland.
Right.
You know, it's a shame too, yeah. Really, because Austria and Switzerland really do put out some really interesting, fascinating wines. But again, we tend to gravitate toward the ones we know.
Right.
Florida State wineries that you want to gravitate to, that's great. I'm not complaining.
Absolutely.
But,
and it's local to us, and
it's local and it's easy to get to, you know.
And you do ship, so I mean,
you do ship. Yeah.
So you know, it's, even if it's not local, you can still get your hands on it. And I finished my glass early on, which kind of messed me up because I was expecting it to last for the show. But I think within the first 20 minutes, this glass was gone. So, oh yeah, well now you can. Yeah, we kind of keep you from that for an hour during the show. But the plantation spice just kind of it just went down for some reason real quickly. So
it can and it does.
And let's see. So wow, that was that's pretty good. We still have time here to discuss again some of the events that are coming up. Now what I'm looking at on your website, you said something about December the 9th was going to be a wine fest.
No.
Oh, okay. What did I mean?
January 9th.
January, okay.
January 9th. What did I do? I asked my engineer here, and she's telling me that I did say the wrong day.
Okay.
So,
because on the website, it just shows December 12th, and Wine Festival 8th birthday. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah,
That's fantastic. So eight years old on, and the celebration will be, on a little slow tonight because of the cold weather. You know, what's funny about the bus people is they have, so we hear it.
I know, and I appreciate that, too.
Yeah, the mittens or whatever they wear out there, it's incredible because it's just blustery cold outside. It's 60-something degrees. So.
Yeah, 60, I think 67, I think it dropped down to now.
Yep, exactly. Wine Fest and 8th birthday party, December the 12th. That's, of course, this year. 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., Florida State's Winery. Be sure to check that out. And that should do it through the end of the year until January the 9th. And that's correct, right?
Right.
January
the 9th.
The 9th,
yes.
Okay.
The 9th, yeah.
So you definitely want to catch the Wine Festival on December the 12th. And from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it's going to be a great time and a great celebration, and congratulations to the winery for their 8th anniversary birthday. And
we'll have some vendors out there that day, too. I mean, it's a good chance, only a couple of weeks before Christmas and other holidays this time of year, and so a good chance to come out and pick up some stuff and do some Christmas shopping.
Yes, definitely a great place. And wine as a gift is perfect as well.
Never, ever have I had someone bring back a bottle of wine and say, "I received this for a gift. I want to return it." It's never happened.
I could bring you a few empty bottles, but that's
not. That doesn't work.
Let's see. And then, the next wine class will be January 23rd. January 23rd, mark your calendars for that one as well. It's a great time to visit Florida because most of the north is frozen now. They're under ice. And we're over here about the coldest it's going to get right now is in the low 60s. I think it's going to be in the 40s again, but because it was in the 40s last week, but we're out of that. I mean, it didn't last very long.
And no, never does.
I lost my pen, so... let's see. So wine class 2010. If you haven't been, you get it's a great class. You get a brief history of the wines, grape varietals, the diseases in grapes, glass styles and uses, cork history, the evolution and uses, oak aging. You learn all about oak aging, wine tasting process and scoring, rating of wine of the wines, and discussing each in detail at Florida State's Winery. Excellent, excellent one. Yes.
And if I may interject here.
Absolutely.
During our birthday party next week, we also will be tasting our sister winery's Carambola wine, our starfruit wine.
Oh.
We will have that available for tasting and for purchase. So a lot of you starfruit fans out there always ask if we have it. We are going to be tasting it and trying it at the birthday party. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, okay, what is a starfruit now?
Made with carambola, made with starfruit. It's,
I have to look that up.
If you're not familiar with the fruit, it is actually made with starfruit.
Wow.
And it's a unique wine. It's tastes, if you're familiar with the starfruit, it tastes just like the starfruit.
Hmm.
And very high in potassium and vitamin C, so it's a great breakfast drink. And so.
Excellent. Okay, that sounds wonderful.
That'll be available too on the 12th. On our birthday.
Excellent. Okay, as well as cake and
cake.
It'll be a big celebration.
And prizes and giveaways and just a fun time. So if you get an opportunity, by all means, come out.
Excellent. Okay, that's going to close out the show for this week, and definitely tune us in next week. And do you have a topic yet for?
I think for the next 2 weeks before the end of the year, we're going to do Australia.
Okay.
Not Australia, but Australia, the Down Under, New World wine from Australia. And then that'll probably take us a couple of weeks to cover that. That'll put us into the end of the year.
Excellent.
Or, if it doesn't, I might, we're going to talk a little bit about champagne, probably not this coming week, but the week after that, because holidays are big champagne time. So I'm going to talk a little bit about champagne and sparkling wines and, best way to serve it and stuff like that.
90 seconds. Okay, join us again next week, 7 p.m., right here on Blog Talk Radio and 1,000 Mics. We will return live next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Mark your calendars. We got to do the outro. Thank you, Ron. It's been a pleasure and very informative as always. And we'll see you next week here on It's All About Wine. And thank you for listening. And you can listen to us on iTunes. All the details are coming up right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. This concludes our call-in talk show for the evening. Special thank you to Ron Hunt of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Visit the winery online at www.floridaestateswines.com. That's WINES.com. Email address for the winery is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com. Or call area code 813-996-2113. If you're in the area, Florida Estates Winery is located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For information on our show and music stream, visit us on our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/ChicoDog1. That's D-A-W-G and the number 1. Email address is podcast@ChicoDog.com. Follow